Notre Dame, with a historic tradition of excellence, welcomes you to the Jack Swarbrick Show, where we pursue all things Notre Dame athletics.
The Jack Swarbrick Show is brought to you by
Team Notre Dame partner Spirit, Coke Zero, Under Armour, Gatorade, and is also sponsored by Xfinity. Now, the host of the Jack Swarbrick Show, Jack Nolan, on your home for Notre Dame football, 89 WLS.
Welcome, Irish fans, to this week's edition of the Jack Swarbrick Show. On today's show, we'll talk with Notre Dame 2013 National Championship soccer coach and Scottish soccer legend Bobby Clark. And we will also be joined by Notre Dame football wide receiver Torrey Hunter Jr. Now, here are your hosts, Notre Dame Vice President and Director of Athletics Jack Swarbrick and Notre Dame football captain and starting linebacker Joe Schmidt.
Thanks very much. You know, after last week, I think we ought to rename it the flood of fan mail for Joe Schmidt coming on this show.
No, I don't know.
It's got to be the Jack Swarbrick and Joe Schmidt show, but we'll work on that down the road.
I've been paying people just, you know, little bits, trying to get them to send mail in so you think that the people like me.
Just confirms we have an audience, which is reassuring.
Yeah, it is.
So a big week at Notre Dame football, and Let's leave the game for a moment and talk about your debut as a television star here and part of the Showtime series. What's the reaction been inside the building to that?
I think the reaction's been positive. I think kind of leading into Tuesday night, I think that guys really didn't know how it was going to turn out. You know, they had been shooting for so long. They really shot all of training camp. They were in every meeting. They went to all of our dinners, breakfasts, lunches. They came to our houses. So there was a sense of worry, if you will, with the team. But I think the guys at Showtime, you know, those producers, the Jasons, they did a heck of a job, really coming up with a great show, and kind of giving, you know, viewers an inside look at Notre Dame football and really what we're going through on a day-to-day basis. So I thought they did an awesome job, and I was really happy with the show. I thought it went well.
You know, you mentioned they have been omnipresent.
Yeah. Good word.
For 6 weeks now. Are you able to tune that out? I mean, you know, in the middle of practice, there's somebody around with a camera and in the locker room, et cetera. Can you tune it out?
I think we can. At this point, they're almost like they're just like anybody else that's ever there. You know, we have our media department there all the time. We have the cameras that are focused on us throughout practice. So you can't exactly think about the Showtime people being there, or else you're going to start messing plays up and making mistakes. So it was funny, though. I don't think they were there at the start of practice on Tuesday, and it was almost weird how little activity there was on the sideline. So it's become a normal. You know, it's become our new normal. Rather, having all that activity, having all those cameras. So it's kind of just a part of the whole show now.
Well, you had a bit of a star turn in the first episode,
yeah.
Including admitting you didn't know where class was. Thanks a lot for that.
Well, with all this construction, I was in the baseball lot at the. For those of you that aren't familiar with Notre Dame's campus, the Notre Dame baseball field and baseball lot are on one edge of campus, and all of the main classes are in the center portion of campus. But between those two locations, there is always a new path because we have the Campus Crossroads project that has begun and is still going on throughout the season. So you don't exactly know where you're going to be able to go to get to class. So I kind of took an interesting route, which is what they had got on camera. I was hoping I didn't just get caught inside some chain link fence. I thought that could be kind of embarrassing.
What was the family's reaction?
I thought they really liked it. I sat and watched it with my mom. She was in town, which was great. She thought it went well. She thought some of my comments were a little ridiculous, asking if the Pope watches us play football games. Yeah. Once again, they're around us all the time, so they catch even the jokes we make. So it's kind of fun.
Well, the show culminated with the recap of a very successful opening weekend against Texas here at home. What were your major takeaways from the game?
It was a tough first game because, you know, they had a new offensive coordinator. I'm speaking kind of from the defensive mindset. They had a new offensive coordinator. They have a lot of talent on the offensive side of the ball. And it's University of Texas. They have one of the most storied traditions, you know, the Longhorn Football Network, crazy fan base. I mean, you saw how many burnt orange people were in South Bend for the game. So I thought it went really very well for a first game. I thought we played very well on both sides of the ball. The offense executed almost, you know, as seamlessly as you can in a first game situation. And the defense played assignment correct, and we had very, very few mental errors. I don't think I've ever seen we do a production breakdown of each individual player after a game, and I don't think I've ever seen production ratios that high really in any game. So it was great to see.
You know, really, really tough early injury for Torian. In the game, which we just hated to see. But it did reflect the importance of everybody being ready to play and you know, everybody being prepared to step in. And we certainly saw that in the guys that filled in for him.
Definitely. It's so sad because you saw what Tarian was doing this offseason. You know, he worked extremely hard. He came in each and every day. He became a leader in that on that offense. And he was really coming to his own. So it was so hard for me to see him kind of walk up the tunnel there and have to talk to him after the game. But really, with that came that unique opportunity for those guys. And I thought, CJ Procise had a heck of an offseason as well. He's been performing really as good as I've seen anybody perform at running back in my time here. He's extremely versatile, which makes him dangerous. You don't know where he's going to be on the field. And then you got some freshman running backs that really can step up at any time. So Coach Kelly, Coach Denbrock, who we had on last week, I think they're doing a great job of kind of finding ways to get those guys the ball in opportunistic situations.
Yeah, out of the frying pan into the fire.
Yeah.
I mean, there are no easy weeks. We head to a state. I was shocked to learn we'd never played a football game in before.
What?
First time ever in Virginia, which is sort of exciting.
Wow.
And
Team 127 breaking down those walls.
Yeah, absolutely. What can you tell us about this week's opponent?
Well, Virginia's a well-coached team. Offensively, they've got a lot of they've got weapons. They have one of the better running backs in the country, and they find ways to get him the football. And he's a very dangerous man in the backfield. I think that they have their receiving core is good, their offensive line very solid, their quarterback's good. So they present a unique challenge based on those guys, and then also on their scheme. They have a pro style scheme. They have a coordinator that came from the NFL. So they do a lot of interesting things as an offense, and they make it difficult for a defense to defend them. So it'll be fun for us. And then I know that their defensive coordinator is a former Notre Dame guy, the guy that I grew up watching, John Tenuta. So that'll be fun to see how the offense kind of reacts to his style, his energetic style. So I think that they're getting excited for that.
Yeah, it'll be great to see John again. And, what you're going to get is a very creative approach to pressure. You're going to see a million different looks and blitzes. And, John is creative as it comes at that. And it'll be an interesting next challenge for our offense, who played so well in week one.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I think it's good for our offense that they're playing someone like that, because they are able to see some of the most exotic looks. We like to think the most exotic looks on defense for us. So I think we've done a good job throughout the spring and the summer and last year kind of preparing them to see really what you can't even prepare for. So, bringing guys from places that they just have never came from. So
talk to us a little bit about the transition from game to game. So what time do you devote to looking back at Texas and analyzing the performance there before you flip the switch to the next opponent, in this case, Virginia?
So I think that for me personally, I think it's kind of coach's philosophy as well. We went on Saturday night, you take Sunday to kind of enjoy that game. You recover, you watch that game tape. You understand the mistakes that were made. And then Monday we have one last meeting. The final kind of culmination of all what they saw in the game, maybe what you saw in the game, you talk about it. After that meeting breaks at about 5:15 on Monday night, it's over. Texas is gone. We have to move on. And so with that, we've probably watched a little bit of game tape on Virginia as a as a team. The staff obviously already has their scouting reports done. But then we're fully on Virginia, and you really can't look back, or you're going to get beat the next week. So that's kind of our philosophy.
Not looking for any state secrets here, but as you go through that process of closing out Texas, what are the things that you come out of that game saying, here are the areas of focus and improvement going forward based on the Texas performance?
So I guess really for as a defense is really what I could speak to. I know that we made some mistakes on some key concepts that we wanted to make sure that we got down. You know, whether it was, you know, whatever they came out in, obviously trade secrets to a certain extent. But there were a few mistakes that we need to make sure we kind of rectify. We gave up some explosive plays, which we're never happy with. And so we wanted to make sure that we saw them. And maybe we even on a couple of those plays, we were in the right position. We just didn't execute. And so we had to just kind of go over those, make sure we saw that. And really that's kind of the main takeaways, because we didn't make a lot of mental errors. And if there's one other main thing that you could do is maybe just tackle a little bit better. But for our first game, I thought we did pretty well there too. So missed a little bit of production in the backfield. I know Sheldon's been whining all week about looking like a seal sliding across the turf in Notre Dame Stadium. So.
He had a great game.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That was a classic case of where the stats don't necessarily reflect the pressure.
Oh, my gosh.
That he was creating. He was wreaking havoc in the interior there, wasn't he?
Oh, my gosh. He was, all jokes aside, Sheldon was completely dominant in that football game. No one could block him. And it was, and that's how he's got those unique traits of explosiveness, strength, you know, power, and he can play any play, run or pass. And really, the entire defensive line, you don't stop at Sheldon. And you could talk about Isaac Rochelle. You could talk about Daniel Cage. Jerry Tillery had his first career sack. Andrew Trombetti, Romeo. It was really impressive what they were able to do on the defensive line.
Yeah, it was. We on both lines, I thought we really controlled the line of scrimmage, which of course is a good place to start in any game.
Yeah, I mean, for me, that's where I would love to start. They keep the big men off of me, and hopefully that makes my life a lot easier, and I can make some tackles. So,
you know, I think the play that's gotten the most post game life in terms of being shared is McGlinchey's attempt to celebrate with Malik when he's running down the field after a touchdown.
Yeah, McGlinchey. We might just have to have him just run back to the bench from now on. You know, maybe just save the celebrations for when you're sitting down. You know, there's nothing that could possibly go wrong, and we can't hurt anyone because he doesn't realize how big he is. So hopefully we can talk to Mike about that. You know, he gets real excited though. So
yeah, well let's hope there are a lot more reasons for him to celebrate.
Let's hope so.
In the week ahead, let's take a break and then we'll come back with our first guest.
Sounds good. Let's do it.
Irish fans, make sure you download the official WatchND mobile app, available on iOS and Android devices. The WatchND mobile app is the best way to experience great Fighting Irish digital media, video, and audio content right on your tablet or smartphone. You'll get full access to our entire video on-demand library, live game and event broadcasts, live shows and press conferences, live game stats, and more. And best of all, it's free. Search for WatchND in the iTunes Store or Android Play to download the WatchND mobile app today.
The Fighting Irish play here, 89 WLS.
Our first guest on this week's Jack Swarbrick Show is a junior wide receiver from Prosper, Texas, by the name of Torrey Hunter Jr. Torrey did not play at all during his freshman year while recovering from a broken leg suffered in a practice for a postseason high school all-star game. Last season, he caught 7 passes for 65 yards and 1 touchdown and was named Notre Dame's newcomer of the year on offense. This season marks the first time he has been 100% physically since suffering the broken leg, and this fact has been demonstrated by his fine play in fall camp and in the season's first game against Texas when he caught 2 passes for 31 yards and also ran it once. Torrey is here this morning to chat with Jack and Joe.
Torrey, thanks so much for joining us. Thanks especially for bringing an element of style to the show.
Yeah,
I'm not pointing fingers at anybody here. But,
I'm wearing workout gear, and Torrey comes up and makes me look ridiculous.
I wouldn't normally dress like this. I have a presentation right after this, so you know I gotta dress nicely.
Oh,
you know,
Notre Dame student athlete. So. There we go, man. I like that.
What class is that presentation?
Business problem solving. So we have to present to a censure. And we have to. We had a case that we had to solve the problem for, so we have to present that to Accenture today. Looking forward to it.
Oh, is that with Chris Stevens?
No, it's with it's a business problem solving class, so it's not with Chris Stevens.
No. That was one of my favorite courses. He actually taught that course when I was it's a great class.
Chris
though.
Stevens is the man.
Oh, he's
man,
a legend,
no
an absolute
no
legend
doubt.
On campus, but.
So Accenture is going to be better off after getting this presentation today.
Oh, for
You've
sure.
solved the problem.
For sure. We definitely solved the problem, man. We think we have the best problem, the best solution to that problem, you know, out of everyone in the class. So
speaking of solving problems, you solved the problem of the Texas defense pretty well last weekend. Yeah. And, you know, of course, Joe only wanted to talk about Notre Dame's defense in the first portion of the program.
Of course.
So a little equal time here. We want to focus on the offensive performance, which was excellent. You know, Malik was certainly in the zone. All of you guys played so well. What's your take on what's your postmortem on the Texas game?
You know, I think we prepared well. We were confident in our preparation. We're confident in our coaches and their, you know, and their game plan. But you know, the scary part is we didn't even play to the, you know, to our, you know, potential. We made some mistakes and we missed out on some big plays, and we really think that that score could have been, you know, worse than it was. So, you know, we're just looking forward to getting better every week and just eliminating those mistakes that we made so we can just capitalize on those big plays that we missed out on in Texas.
So, Bones, I mean, how does it feel? For those of you who don't know, Torrey's little unofficial nickname is Torrey Bones with Jared Grace and I we are kind of the Bone Brothers.
Bone Brothers,
yeah. We've all kind of gotten some ridiculous breaks to our legs. But, Bones, you're back. You're 100%. Can you just talk a little bit about, you know, I know how it feels to be back out there running around feeling, right. You know, if you feel to your full potential. You're running around as fast as you can. Just how do you feel right now, and how do you feel you're fitting in the offense right now?
You know, it just feels great to be back, man. It's definitely a blessing to just not go through fall camp, you know, make it through the second day without having an injury. You know, last year I got hurt the second day of camp. You know, I had a good day the first day, and the second day I got hurt. So to have, you know, be free of the injury bug all through fall camp and actually playing the first game, it feels great, man. It's a blessing. I'm just, you know, grateful to be out there with my teammates and be able to grind with them. And I'm just looking forward to getting better every week and just giving the coaches, you know, my best game every week.
You know, you had such a great camp that even the athletic director could see it when he was in attendance. Really, really stand out the entire camp process. What was your approach coming in? I mean, what did you do off season? How did you sort of take this next step, which you've clearly taken in terms of your ability and your approach to the game?
You know, I didn't really do anything different. I'm always a hard worker. You know, I try to take bits and pieces that work for other players, and I try to apply it to my game. Not necessarily change mine, but, you know, just apply it and just pick up on new skills. You know, I kind of look up to Amir because he's been playing the Z for, you know, a whole year before I did. So I picked up some things from Amir in the spring. We just perfected those over the summer, and then whenever fall camp came, it was just time to show out and just play the way I know how to play and play hard, make the difficult catches. You know, that's what I just tried to pride myself on this fall, and, you know, I took advantage of the opportunities they gave me.
You know, it's such a sophisticated offense that we run. What are the challenges of learning it? I mean, how much sight adjustment happens when you get to the line of scrimmage? Mm-hmm. What sort of decisions are you making after the play's been called and before it's executed?
Right. Especially in the Z position, we have to read a lot of coverages on the fly, even like after the ball is snapped. You know, some teams disguise, you know, our team disguises
a little bit of disguise.
Yeah, disguises pretty well. So we kind of have to read on the fly. And that's probably one of the hardest parts. First off, you know, coming in as a freshman is just learning the signals and the steps. The signals, we have, you know, a lot of signals and stuff like that. Once you learn those, then you can start focusing on the sight adjust and all those different things. And then after that, learning how to run your route after you know it's a sight adjust, you know, against different coverages, different types of players. So there's a lot that goes into it. And, you know, I think that's what is making our wide receiver group so good this year, is because we're starting to reach that level of, you know, mastery, you know, for different defenses.
when I think about our offense and our receiving core, I think versatility, and I know we put a premium on versatility.
Right.
And really, I mean, for someone that plays against you every single day, I know you are one of the most versatile people out there. You can block, you can catch, you can come into the backfield, run jet sweeps. You can do just about everything the offense wants you to do, and you play baseball. And yeah. So it's unbelievable how much you can do. So I mean, just kind of talk a little bit about how you're able to kind of gain like a mastery over all of those different things. And it's so difficult even to just do one thing. You just talked about side adjust. There's no way I could ever do that. So how are you able to kind of come into your own doing all that and playing baseball here at the University of Notre Dame?
I've always been like a really observant person, and I can look at something and then just kind of go do it. I guess that's just a blessing, blessing really, just to be that type of athlete to go see something and just go do it. And I think that's really kind of helped me out for baseball. I can watch somebody swing and then go in the cage and then try to go do it and perfect my own swing. Or, as I was saying, we watch film, we watch film and see how they play their defenses and then to go out and translate it to the field. I just think that really helps me a lot, to be able to play my best in both sports. That I can pick up on things easily, and I'm very coachable. So that really helps out a lot, no doubt.
Interesting dynamic, of course, with a father who's such an accomplished professional athlete,
right.
One of the great ball players of this generation, and a guy who's been a leader on so many clubs, really established himself as a guy teams look to lead. What's the byplay like? I mean, do you guys critique each other's performance? Do you say, "Dad, I can't believe you swung at that slider in the sixth inning"? After a football game? What's the conversation like between you and he?
If I mess up, he'll let me know, of course. And he's always been, on my butt about baseball. If I mess up a swing, he'll correct it. But I've also, had times where I've helped him, come out of a slump or something, or change something, just tweak his swing a little bit, just because he's taught me so much. And I'm able to see it in his swing. If he's dipping his shoulder or something like that, I'll let him know. He'll go in the cage and fix it, or if I'm in the cage with him, he'll fix it right there. So there's kind of that constant communication. Whenever we get together, it's harder to do over the phone because I'm not able to catch a lot of games. But if we're in the cage, we'll try to correct each other, go back and forth. So it's pretty cool, dynamic to have with your father. So.
That's awesome. You're critiquing a 15-time All-Star in the batting cages. It's like that's an absolutely it's an awesome story right there.
No, it's cool.
The guy that I want to ask you about now is CJ Procise. We talked a little bit earlier on the show about TFO and him going down with the knee, which is
tough.
Extremely tough. I know you're close with Tarian. But can you talk a little bit about CJ's transition from the receiving core, where he was pretty much exclusively last year, and doing a lot of things that you're doing, and kind of now moving back into almost a featured back kind of role? And then just speak to a little bit about how difficult that might be and what you see from CJ through camp and now into the first week.
Yeah, you talk about me being versatile. Like, he's one of the most versatile people I've ever known, man. To go from defense to offense.
Yeah, that's right.
And then play at the Z position extremely well. He played extremely well at the Z position. And now go from the Z to running back and then excel there. Like, it's unreal, the type of player he is, man. He works so hard. He's been in the film room. He learned the running back position in like 2 weeks, which is kind of crazy, man. in spring, man, like he went out there and didn't skip a beat. Like, he knew exactly what he was doing. He catches on, and he's very coachable, man. That, I think that helps him out a lot, man. That's what made his transition so easy.
Wow.
A lot of the summer, you guys are in control of your own destiny in terms of organizing practices and working out. And I get to see some of those. The mm-hmm. coaches don't. And there's a lot of great one-on-one competition during those summer workouts.
A lot of trash talking.
A lot of trash talking. Who do you enjoy the challenge of facing the most, I guess? What in those sort of dynamics where you're going at each other one-on-one like that?
Besides me, of course, obviously. I am really the biggest challenge that there is in a one-on-one drill.
I love seeing Joe.
But, yeah. When you line up in that situation, I'm open.
Yeah, I'm open before the play.
Yeah, he already knows. He looks right at me. He's like, I'm not letting him go anywhere.
I'm just going to hold right the heck out of you.
But, yeah, in those one-on-one situations, man, you know, I love going against Matthias Farley. He is always, you know, a tough challenge. And Kevari Russell whenever he's, you know, in the nickel. That's been a, you know, pretty tough challenge for me. You know, in the fall and stuff like that. He's just a great cover guy, man. He loves man on man, man to man. And, you know, I like going against him.
We're going to have to let you go here. But okay. Joe and I started by talking about the first episode of the Showtime show. Mm-hmm. What were your impressions?
I thought it was really well put together, man. I didn't know how it was going to turn out. You know, at first it kind of seemed like a little invasive, but, you know, as time went on, you know, those guys are cool. They don't even, you know, get in the way that much. You just kind of get used to them. You don't even know they're there at practice. Well, they weren't there.
That's what I said.
They weren't there
the other day.
One of the other days, and you kind of could tell, like, something was weird.
Yeah.
Like, where is everybody at?
I know.
But, you know, you kind of get used to it. And, you know, I enjoyed the show a lot. I thought it was really well put together.
Good. Well, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank
good
you.
Luck with the Accenture
Appreciate
presentation.
It. Thanks, Tori. Good luck, man.
And good luck this week.
Thank you.
Shudduff and Brandmeier, weekday mornings at 9 on Chicago's Talk Leader, 89 WLS.
Welcome back to the Jack Swarbrick Show. Our next guest just began his 29th year as a collegiate soccer coach, during which time he has guided his teams to wins in 68% of their games. In his first 14 full seasons at Notre Dame, Bobby Clark guided the Irish to 7 conference titles, 13 NCAA appearances, and the 2013 NCAA championship. Clark is literally a legend in the annals of Scottish soccer. As a goalkeeper, Clark represented Scotland at every level of soccer and was a member of Scotland's World Cup teams in 1970, 74, and 78. In 2002, he was named one of the top 25 all-time players for the Aberdeen Dons. Jack and Joe, take it away.
Soccer legend, coach.
Wow.
That's strong stuff, man.
Don't believe everything you just read. You heard there, Jack. The 70 World Cup, I was on the bench, and we never got there. Germany got there. The 74 World Cup, I did play in qualifying games, but by the time 74, the actual tournament came around, a new coach came in. He didn't agree with my mother, but he didn't pick me. So I never went to Germany. But I did go to Argentina, and again, I sat in the bench. So I was involved in 3 campaigns, but I've got a lot of splinters from sitting in the bench.
Yeah,
so.
That doesn't square with the fact that you held the record for consecutive shutouts until, what, about 3 or 4 years ago, right?
Yeah, no, that went for a long while. I had a very good defense. I really had. I had a very good team. But it was a good time, and it's been fun. It's given me a lot of notoriety after the fact, so I still get calls about it to this day, so it's lasted a long while.
I just ought to drop out of this. We ought to have this athlete to athlete. I ought to not be in this.
I'm not even close to that. You might say, yeah, maybe I didn't make the 3 World Cup teams, but I was not even ever in a conversation for those kinds of things. I played ASO ball and Silver Elite in when I was 12, but that's about it.
But I bet you played it well.
I tried really hard.
Well, I've never played football, but I did play. I actually played rugby. That was the nearest I got at high school. My high school only had a rugby team, so I'd play rugby every Saturday morning, and I'd play football every Saturday afternoon.
No way.
Football, soccer.
Yeah.
My football was always my love. So.
Oh, that's awesome. That's really, really fun.
Did you get a chance to watch the Australian rugby team while they've been
didn't.
Here?
No, I didn't. I should have done, because I've actually seen them playing New Zealand. I remember when I was with Aberdeen, we were touring Australia. And we stayed in the same hotel as the All Blacks. And, of course, being a rugby fan myself, I talked to the players, and they actually left us tickets, and we went to see that game. It was terrific. I mean, Australia and New Zealand, that's in South Africa. These are tremendous rugby places. So I meant to get out, but this is our season. It's crazy up around our office just now.
Those guys were absolutely massive. Did you see the Australian national team like kind of walking around?
Yeah, I saw that much.
They had some complete monsters on their team, and they would be a dangerous American football team as well as a rugby team. It was
no,
they were.
It's a good game. It's a tough game. There are similarities, and you know, I'm a rugby. I'm a rugby fan. Scotland, unfortunately, is not doing so well just now. They're having a tough time with it. I think we were bottom. No, yeah, I think we were actually. We got the wooden spoon in the six. I think we're even behind Italy. We lost to Italy, which is
which
good.
Is not good. No, that's you never want to lose to the Italians.
No, let's not offend any segments of our audience here. Well, the Scottish rugby team may not be doing well, but the Notre Dame soccer team is doing off to a very, very encouraging start. Give us your sense that this early part of the season.
It's a good start, but it's nothing more than that. I think you've always got a good start is better than a bad start. We always have the start of the season, we go to IU's tournament, then we have our own tournament. And I always feel if we come out of that above 500, we're doing okay. And this year we've come out quite nicely. But, you know, it's we've got such a hard schedule. You just got to say, well, put that behind us, and then we've got to move on. I mean, we've got a huge game coming up, you know, this weekend, and possibly I think we play Clemson on Saturday night. And I thought last year Clemson was the best team we played in the ACC last year. They knocked us out in the semi-final of the ACC tournament. It was a little bit. We were actually winning 1-0 with about a minute to go, and then they scored in a corner kick, and then they eliminated us in penalty kicks. But I also felt they were the better side on the night, and I felt they controlled the game. We found it very, very hard to find a rhythm in that game. So this will be a good test. This, I think, will be a pretty accurate test to see where we are this year.
So Scottish football legend transitioning now, and I'm a history guy, and I also like hearing coaches talk about how they kind of formulate how they coach and how they think about the game. So I know that you were a heck of a soccer player back in the day, but now transitioning from there to now as a coach, you're 29 seasons in. How have you become one of the premier tacticians, in the country and in the world? Even I'll throw that in there for you. But how did you kind of evolve into that state and see the game maybe in a different way?
I think there's a lot of reasons. I was a phys ed teacher, you know, and I used to train every morning, obviously with Aberdeen. But my mother, when I was signing the contract, made it I get every afternoon off to teach.
No
so
way.
I actually taught high school every afternoon in Aberdeen.
That's
so
awesome.
I would play it. So I think being a teacher got me thinking. And obviously, I was a phys ed teacher. I was working mainly with sports in the afternoons. So that got me thinking. And then my last 5 years as a player, I ran the youth program with another lad, and Alec Ferguson, who's
a
famous Manchester United, he was our coach.
No way.
So I my last 5 years, I was running a youth program, and I was really getting in the ear of he's now Sir Alec Ferguson. But I think that was a great grounding. And so I had a lot of things. I had a lot of good coaches along the line. My first coach was a tremendous coach also. He was the reason I really went to Aberdeen. That was my club team. But I think finishing off with Alec Ferguson when I was actually coaching the youth program and still playing, I think that was the thing that gave me a lot of insight into it. And then it's just developed from there. And being a teacher, being a coach, I think the college game was the best avenue for me to go. I think when I finished playing, I would be about 37. I went out to Africa and coached for a year. And I felt I loved coaching. And when I came back, somebody actually asked me, I got a phone call, literally the day I got back, said, would you like to, have you ever thought of coaching at the college level in America? And I said, I had no idea about the college level. He said, well, there was a job at Princeton. He said, well, why not send your resume in and see what happens? Well, they took me over. But it actually Bob Bradley, so he got the job. But they were terrific. They told me to, hey, you should do this, you know. And anyway, the next job that came up was Dartmouth, and it was one of the best decisions I think I ever made in my life.
Wow, that is incredibly interesting stuff,
Coach. I got to watch the IU game on television, and then the home games here. And one thing that really struck me about this squad was its fitness, especially an overtime against Maryland, tough match. You come back overtime against Indiana, and you seemed, frankly, much fresher in the overtime than our opponent. Talk to me a little bit about that and the approach to the season.
I think there's been a the main reason for that, I think a couple of years ago, we got Matt Howley was our fitness coach. And, you know, Matt is the first person. He's got all the new ideas. We're all wearing the GPS and the heart rate monitors. And he had all the ideas. And he's the first person I've ever said, look, here's our fitness program. Take it and look at it, revise it. I did this when I was actually at Stanford. I did it with our track coach who I'd known from Dartmouth. I said, look, would you look at my program and see how you would adjust it? And so I did the same to Matt Howley. And Matt, in the last couple of years, has really taken the boys on board. Most of the guys will find a reason to come back on campus in the summer, whether it's working camps, doing summer school, and they'll work with them. And this year was our best. We do it the beep test is what we call it. You know, it's a yo-yo test where they go back and forward. And we can compare it to a lot of other because most professional teams do this beep test. So we can get comparisons. And really this year we were, I think it was a 29 was the average
wow.
of the team. And, you know, I know some of the professional teams, their average to be fit have got to be a 23. So we're way above it. So a 29, so definitely I give Matt a lot of credit for getting the team as fit as it has been this year. And I think when it came to these overtime games, I mean, we had an overtime game against Maryland, one of the top teams in the country, and then against IU at IU. And IU gave us a hard time in the first half, you know, but the second half we began to wear them down. And by the overtime, there was only one team really wanted to win that game, and it was us. And I think a lot of it, as you say, Jack, was our fitness.
Those tests are absolutely no joke. We had to do a beep test, and I thought I was going to die on the field in the Loftus. Obviously, a little different for a bunch of larger men to be running that test. But I have all the respect in the world for your team getting 29, and I'm not going to say what we got.
It's a different sport, but that was the big average. That was the best average we've had.
That's
so
dang good.
It was quite amazing.
And so now, kind of transitioning, I know. One of the reasons you've also been so well, along with being a tactician, is that you were able to bring in top talent year after year here to Notre Dame. And I know Notre Dame recruits for itself, but you've got you've got a lot of guys that have been here for a long time. You've got Max Lakowecki, you got Connor Kokoda, Patrick Hoda, and your captains. You know, you got Evan Pankin, all these guys that can really, they're older guys that kind of have been in your system for a while. Can you talk a little bit about the leadership on this team and how it's able to kind of just police this? Maybe that's the reason you have such good fitness. I don't know. What do you think about your leadership right now?
I think leadership is key to success in any team. I don't think there's any question. It's not about just individual talent. It's about leadership and about who they are. And we've got three very good captains this year. You know, they're all very, very competitive. But they're all different. I think that's the nice thing, that they all bring something else to the table. I mean, Max is one of the most competitive people, but he's got a sort of fun side to him. And he brings us a fun side. And people, he's very approachable. So all the people in the locker room, so he can lighten things up. But once he steps out in the field, there's nobody more competitive than him. Connor Klakota, he's just, the glass is always... You're full. Yeah,
always
it's full. Not half full. It's always full.
It's always complete. Yeah.
Connor's just a great kid. Comes to practice every day. Brings 100%. Talks. He's fantastic. And then you get Patrick Hodan, the kind of the star, you know.
Yeah.
But he's a quiet kid, but he's very cerebral, and he's the guy that's always thinking. He's not whatever everybody else is talking about things, but he's thinking, and he can give his top as well. So I think it's a really good trio there.
Well, it's certainly having great results in the early part of the season, Coach. We wish you all kinds of luck in the remainder of the season. We'll be following you with interest, and I am resolved after this show, if it can be Sir Alec Ferguson, it should be Sir Bobby Clark. We're going to start working on this. Coach, thanks for being with us.
Thank
you so much for coming.
Thank
by.
You, and good luck to you, Joe, for your season.
No,
all the very best.
Really appreciate
yes.
that.
Notre Dame football is on 89 WLS.
It's time now to wrap things up here on the Jack Swarbrick Show. Here are Jack and Joe.
Thanks, Joe. You know, I love these shows where we have a really talented student athlete and a great coach. It sort of gives you both sides of the dynamic, and that's great fun.
Oh my gosh, we had outstanding guests today. You know, Tory Bones, Coach Lark. It makes our job easy when you have great interviews like that. You kind of just sit here and you get to. I learned something today from Coach Clark. It was great.
Yeah, no, it's he's marvelous. And, you know, that's what makes it work here. Great, great dedicated student athletes, great coaches working together. Bobby touched on leadership, the other element that's so important. So thanks for the leadership you provide. Let's go beat Virginia, and we'll see you next week.
Oh, yeah, let's do it. Let's beat Virginia.